guys, and welcome back to The Controversial Mom. I'm your host, Emily Jones. And this week, we're going to focus on the very violent and extreme organization known as Antifa. We've definitely heard their name in the news a lot recently, especially with Trump declaring them a terrorist organization. But we're going to get into some of the details and better understand exactly why Trump did what he did, and more importantly, how others are following his lead, not just here in our country, but across the world. So let's dig into the details. Antifa's been around for, well, a really long time. I first heard about them more than ever during Trump's first term as president. And I really didn't know a whole lot about them, and honestly, haven't known a whole lot about them over the past couple years, other than the fact that they're really wild, extremely dangerous. So I did what I always do and started digging into the details to really just better understand who is it that we're dealing with and why is Trump so focused on them. Of course, most of us understand and believe that Antifa was somehow loosely tied to the assassination of Charlie Kirk, and that's definitely pushed a lot of leaders across the state or the country to take a very different, approach to how we deal with Antifa. So I've known about Antifa for a while, but like I said, that really put it on my radar after everything that happened with Charlie. So I've spent the past few weeks kind of reading different articles about Antifa, what they stand for, kind of sort of how they operate, and really what we're doing to fight back. So starting with the basics, Antifa is not an organization. I think we all know that. We've all seen the headlines or the leftist propaganda where they say Antifa is just an idea or it's a movement. And there is truth in that, to be honest with you. Everything that I read talks about how it's more of an ideology, which is why people are mocking Trump for declaring them an organization or a terrorist organization when it's just an idea. But there are ways to go about declaring them an organization and trying to fight them as a terrorist group without having structure and organization. So the thing to understand is that with Moms for Liberty, we are an organization. We have an IRS number, we have structure, we have leadership, we have all the things that make us a truly functioning organization where you can go and Google us and figure out who we are. Antifa does not have that. They don't have a set leader. They don't have a structure where, you know, you've got a chapter in each county. Nothing of that sort. It's very loosely defined, and it's just really truly what they say. It's people that associate with the ideology that the federal government is basically bad. They are set to destroy the structure of the United States. And that's pretty much what they focus on. Every time we've seen them in the news, it's usually associated with something extremely violent, like the assassination of Charlie Kirk, or going after ICE agents, doing any type of raid or protest that results in just extreme violence and doxing of individuals. They do try to recruit younger kids, so they have a big focus in college campuses because they're trying to get younger people that really are more or less searching for their identity and who they are. So they recruit these younger kids into the organization and I will say brainwash them into thinking horrible things about our country. And then they roll these kids out into these different parts of the country to go protest and just wreak havoc on the area that they're in. There are a lot of tie-ins with Antifa and other organizations that we know do exist because they are structured. One of those is the Democratic Socialist of America. So that organization should hit home to a lot of you that live in Alabama because the Democratic Socialists of America are the ones that have protested numerous Moms for Liberty events over the years. So last year, Moms for Liberty hosted a couple of town halls focused on the Title IX attempted rewrite by Joe Biden. The DSA is probably the biggest protester of our events, which at the time did not register to me. It didn't really click until after Charlie Kirk's assassination as to who we were dealing with. Thank God I didn't realize that at the time. But there is direct linkage between the DSA, which is a formal organization, and Antifa. So there's a lot of overlap in what they think, obviously, and there's a lot of overlap, I would suspect, in terms of membership. There's also other organizations that would not surprise me to find out there is linkage and overlap, and that would be 50, 51, and Indivisible. Those are the organizations that we're seeing a lot across the country doing these No Kinks protests and whatever other things they're doing to protest Trump's existence, basically. So I think as all of this proceeds with Trump declaring Antifa a terrorist organization and his administration really and truly trying to dismantle the organization and understand the funding streams, I think we're going to see a lot of overlap with these organizations right here in our own state, which is kind of concerning. I know in the events that we've held in the past year, we've seen an uptick in just the pushback, the rhetoric. Thank God it's never been violent. I am very thankful of that. And every time I have a microphone, I acknowledge that people protest us all the time, but by the grace of God, they're never violent. And I'm very appreciative of that in the weirdest sense, like protest me all you want. Let's just keep things civil. So I do think there's probably some ties in with Antifa, these local organizations, but they've never turned violent. And I think we have to really focus on and acknowledge and say thank you that nothing's ever gone violent. But I do think we're going to end up finding out there's a lot of connectivity between these organizations and Antifa. So it will be interesting in the coming months to see what Trump and his team roll out on that front. The other thing, sorry, I'm looking at my notes because I got to make sure we cover everything because there's a lot. The other thing that I really focused a lot on when reading and researching is this big fascination with Portland. Like, there's so much in the news, but so much of it goes back to all this stuff that's happening in Portland. And I get that Portland's a little bit of a different situation because they've had, you know, such an influx of federal agents there to try to control what's happening. But I did not realize that the situation in Portland goes back for a really long time. This really and truly started in 2017, during Trump's first term. But they've had massive issues with Antifa there since 2017. There's been, I think it's 14 confirmed incidences with Antifa in Portland since 2017. So almost like two major events a year in Portland. And I say incidences or events, I'm talking like massive level events. They burned, I think it was 12 police vehicles earlier this year, just in May. That is a huge event to happen at one single time. But that is the type of event we're talking about happening in Portland. So you can argue whether or not Trump was right for mass deportations and whether or not how he's handling ICE rounding up people is right or wrong. All of that we can debate all day long. The issue with Antifa is their way in arguing that is that they turn very violent, extremely violent, to the point that they're burning 12 police vehicles in 1 month. That is insane. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. So there is the ICE detention facility in Portland. Across the street, poor people, there's an apartment complex where, you know, people live and have their normal day-to-day lives, or at least attempt to. There's a lady that was interviewed who lives in that apartment complex. She's been there, I think it was like 20 years. She says that it gets so bad at night, just at night, not during the day, because during the day, while there are protests against the ICE facility and ICE in general, they're relatively civil. Like, they're weird. People dress up in weird costumes, like chicken costumes, which I don't understand. But they go and they peacefully protest. It's not a problem. She says the issue is at night because that's when Antifa comes out. Dressed fully in black with their faces covered, that's when they come out and that's when the chaos starts. And she says it's so bad that, as we've seen, that ICE and federal agents end up using tear gas to control the crowd because it's so violent, they don't really have any other options. Well, this becomes a major issue for her who's inside her home because the tear gas is so bad, she can't breathe. So she has to keep a gas mask by her bed at night. So if it gets really bad, she has to put on her gas mask just so she can be in her home. That's the level of depravity of this situation. The poor woman can't even like sit and breathe in her own apartment without putting on a gas mask. It is absolute insanity. And this is only happening at night when Antifa is present. During the day, completely different situation. She's in a wheelchair because there's a picture of her. She goes out and like walks her neighbor's dog during the day by herself because she's completely fine going out during the day. It's just at night when Antifa shows up that it gets so bad. There was also another business owner who said in the past year alone, his business has been broken into 10 times. Again, all at night, all Antifa related, 10 times. I mean, that's once a month. He's being burglarized because Antifa is so violent. They have zero respect for anyone in their community that they just break into his shop and take whatever they want. And the guy just has to keep dealing with it because he can't just pick up and move his entire business. So Portland is a hot mess when it comes to Antifa. Again, we can debate the thing with Trump and mass deportations and how he's handling that all day long. But the violent rhetoric that Antifa brings into the situation is truly making it completely unlivable for these people that have been there for decades. It's absolutely heart-wrenching for these people. But then there's like this whole other side to it with the media. So I did a lot of research on this topic because I wanted to fully understand the situation. Because again, if this is all just Trump and people pushing back against mass deportations, that's one thing. But it's not. It's much, much, much greater than that situation. And I really started just trying to get a good full picture of what's happening. So I read several newspaper articles that were by leftist journalists because I wanted to have a really good view of everything. And what I read was extremely disheartening. I mean, there's just out and out lies. There's a lot of stuff about Charlie. And we've seen the headlines, we've seen the evidence where the assassination of Charlie was directly tied to Antifa. Like the bullet casings mentioned anti-fascist and all sorts of other Antifa-related terminology. The issue where the ICE agents or the ICE facility in Dallas was targeted. Same thing. There was proof. There was evidence that's been released that this was tied back to Antifa. There are so many articles out there that talk about how none of this stuff is related. None of it's confirmed. This is just right-wing conspiracy that Antifa's bad. It was just so disheartening and frustrating because while I don't trust mainstream media, and I don't think many of us do, to see in black and white how they just openly lie and omit details that are proven details that we know, like, I don't understand how anyone can ever trust anything within the media. And there was this whole article about how Kristi Noem, who's Secretary of Homeland Security, truly focused on nothing but securing our country, and she's traveled the nation really touring these ICE facilities, trying to understand what's going on with mass deportations and, you know, the struggles with ICE and all of that. Well, she went to Portland earlier this month, late September, and she took several, I will say, conservative social media influencers. Benny Johnson, Nick Sordo, there was a couple others. I can't remember who all it was. But they went with her, not to do official meetings, but they went with her to tour a lot of these cities that were more or less under siege because they were trying to report the full story that the media won't do because the media keeps saying it's not that violent. It's, you know, the summer of love, the mostly peaceful protest. That's the narrative they're putting out. So these influencers went to give the flip side of the story or the full picture on all of it, which we should all appreciate. We should want both sides of this conversation so we can figure out where the truth lies. There was a full-on attack, not just of Kristi for allowing them, but for the air quotes false narrative that they put out. I mean, full-on attacks because these people were sharing pictures and videos of what actually happened, what they experienced. Now, Nick Sordo is actually in a lawsuit. I think it's with the city of Portland because he was attacked and he tried to request video surveillance of what happened and they withheld evidence from him. whole nother story about what's going on there. But that's the level of what actually happened. And then these people are being attacked for trying to tell the full story to the American people. It was very disheartening and frustrating to see that kind of media coverage out there coming after conservatives for simply just trying to tell a story. But it's not surprising, just frustrating. And I will say, through all of that, I think one of the positives that I saw was that there's a lot of people getting on board with this Antifa thing. So you've got Trump leading the charge. He's an alpha male. He's going to lead because that's what he does. But it was also reassuring to find out that Ken Paxton, who's the attorney general in Texas, is also launching an investigation at the Texas level. One, because of what happened with Charlie and the ties to, as he calls it, left-wing extremism. He put out a press release and just called it what it is and said there is a disturbing rise in left-wing violence across our country, specifically here in Texas. So he's like launched this formal investigation to see what's happening in Texas and why and what they can do about it. So that's amazing. He also lumped in the fact that the ICE facility in Dallas was also attacked by a sniper not long after Charlie Kirk was assassinated. Two people actually died. I believe it was detainees. And not ICE agents, which was a whole nother question I had, but we'll deal with that later. But the point being, Texas is leading. Texas is really taking the bull by the horns and trying to figure out what can they do as a state to curtail this. I would love to see more states doing this. I don't think it's going to happen because most of the states that are having these issues tend to be blue states. And let's just be honest, blue state governors and blue city mayors aren't against any of this. So I don't think we're going to see a whole lot of it. I think in our red states, thankfully here in Alabama, like I mentioned, we're not seeing a lot of the violence. Now, Montgomery's a whole nother story. I don't know that that's necessarily tied to left-wing ideology. Could be. I don't know enough about it. But that's a whole nother story of what's happening in Montgomery. So I don't know that Alabama really has a massive issue to be investigating. But I would love to see more leadership in these red states talking about what they can do collectively to try and dig into these organizations and fight back. And then the last thing I will highlight, because this certainly has not been anywhere in the news, with Trump signing his executive orders, there have been parliaments in 20 different European countries that have also signed similar texts. Now, theirs are not called executive orders, maybe a resolution, a proclamation. I don't know what they're called. Point being, 20 other countries have seen similar issues with Antifa in the violent rhetoric that they bring to the forefront, that they are now taking action to try and curtail the influence of Antifa in their countries and hopefully rein in some of that violence. So I had not seen that anywhere. I thought that was amazing that Trump is leading the charge and getting so many of these other countries on board to do similar things. Because at the end of the day, this is a very global network. Even though it's not an official organization, it's very structured and very intentional in how they operate. So having a global approach to it, I'm hopeful will actually help us get resolution sooner rather than later here in our own country. Because it's definitely a ticking time bomb and it's getting worse and worse every single day. The longer Trump's in office, the more emboldened these people come, which is extremely weird. But they've got issues with Trump and they're going to do everything they can to fight back. So that is my rant for the week. Full on Antifa and all of the crazy rhetoric that they bring to the forefront. So I've learned a lot in doing this research. I hope that you learned something today. And as always, if you have questions, comments, or topics that you think we should cover in the future, by all means, let me know. Thanks for joining, guys. We'll see you next week.